Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Mind Yourself podcast in association with MOTUS. So continuing on with our season, getting insight into current Irish PhD topics, I'm joined today by Katrina Shelley. Katrina is an Irish Research Council funded student, and she is supervised by Professor Orla Muldoon and Dr. Jenny Roth. In an interesting and exciting jump from what we're used to, Katrina's research circles around Brexit in Northern Ireland from a social psychology perspective. You're very welcome to the podcast, Katrina. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So I'll start, as I've already mentioned to you, this is not my area, not social psychologist at all, but I do obviously have an interest in the topic of Northern Ireland identifying as Irish, which we'll get into. I suppose a good place to start, Katrina, is why did you want to research the area?
Yeah, okay, thanks, Christy. I think it's useful to point out that I came to this topic with it sort of already proposed to me.
Okay.
So I came to the PhD through the studentship route. So there were five topics advertised, and I wanted to obviously get a funded PhD. So this was the topic that did stand out most to me. So I was drawn to this topic because, well, I guess there's two things. The first being that my family is from Donegal.
Okay.
So growing up, I had an awareness of the previous conflict, the troubles in Northern Ireland, and how, you know, my family coming from a border county, how the troubles had affected places on the border, and how the conflict also sometimes spilled over across the border. And obviously the border was a focal point during the conflict. So Brexit brought the issue of the border very much to the forefront. So I was really compelled to sort of come at that topic of Brexit and the border through a psychological lens. And second, I was really like the idea of doing this as of conducting research in this applied setting. So it wasn't like an abstract sort of concept. It was an opportunity to carry out research on an unfolding political event.
Yeah.
Which poses challenges at times, but it also means that, you know, I can do research that is very impactful and sort of I can see direct implications of it.
Yeah, and I think what's really interesting about your research is that it's literally like a live beast, like you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the Northern Ireland Protocol is happening as you're going. Did you have expectations when you started about how things would unfold, and have they happened as you expected, or...?
I suppose it's, yeah, like I think when you do research of any sort of, on any topic, you have to be open to following the science. So being open to what you initially proposed in a grant proposal or whatever it is, or your initial aims are going to have to change. But doing it with a research topic like mine, I found that they have chopped and changed a lot from what I initially sort of thought I'd be doing.
Okay.
So for example, what I predominantly look at now is I just look at nationalist Republicans in Ireland and Northern Ireland, and how that the issue of Brexit has led to them gaining momentum possibly for achieving a united Ireland.
Yeah.
So I've been interested in how the unfolding political situation of Brexit has also led to these potential opportunities for the political group nationalists and Republicans who want Ireland to be united. So that was something that sort of came and untangled as Brexit was untangling, and that's where my research has sort of taken.
Okay.
You know, it's
so you're focusing it on from the national perspective then, nationalist perspective.
Yes.
And right, I already mentioned this to you that we kind of want to break this down as much as possible. So your framework in which you're looking at this is from a social identity theory. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
So just in as simple words as possible, can you explain social identity theory?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a social identity approach, which is like a meta theory, which contains social identity theory, as you mentioned, and also self-categorization theory. So essentially, it means that the groups that we belong to, so myself as a female, as a PhD student, as having, I don't know, an Irish and a British identity, those groups that we belong to provide us with like particular values, beliefs, and like normative behaviours through which we sort of interact and interpret the world.
Yeah.
So that framework was like particularly useful to look at in the context of my topic, because in Northern Ireland, group identities are so at the forefront of society. You know, the society itself is largely divided along those lines of group identities. So nationalists, unionists, Catholic, yep. Protestants. So it became a really useful framework to understand how identities are informing people's understanding of Brexit.
Okay.
Whether they oppose it or support it.
Has it been done before? Like, was there any research during, let's say, the Troubles or immediately after? Or are you the first researcher to
using social identity?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. It's been extensively used in terms of the Troubles. So, like, my supervisor, Professor Orla Muldoon, has always tended to inform her research with that approach. And there would be a lot of other people, Edward Cairns and... pretty much, yeah. It's because it's such a useful framework to understand how group identities are perpetuating and, you know, helping the conflict come to a resolution.
And so you mentioned social identity theory and then social categorization.
Yep.
So what's the difference between them? Or
so social identity theory, you know, stripping it back a lot, is sort of a theory that looks at groups and how they how your group membership makes you potentially more biased about your own group and why you might have negative attitudes about another group.
Yeah.
Whereas the self, so that's intergroup behavior, how groups interact with each other. The self-categorization theory talks about how then that group identity informs your own self-concept. So you're a PhD student, how does that inform who you are as a person? And also, we have so many identities that we belong to. It also describes when those identities become to the forefront. So depending on what situation you're in, like now, you're acting as a podcaster, my university identity is at the forefront, more so than maybe, I don't know, my gender identity or runner identity or something.
And so when you mention in Northern Ireland that identities are stronger, is it kind of like quantity? Is that... like, let's say, like a Republican living in Northern Ireland, is what you're saying it's more common, is that they identify as it more often, or is it just that they really care about it, or both?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. So it's both, really. I think because, so it's the context that they find, the context of Northern Ireland, and this is where the project comes in, is that identities are sort of more always at the forefront because of the divided societies that they live in. So, for example, if you go to Belfast, one street might be covered in Union Jacks, people showing their identity and telling you, I'm from this Protestant community. The next street, you'll get a tricolour and murals of, you know...
Yeah, more in your face.
Exactly. So those identities are really at the forefront. So that's sort of why they're so salient. And then... you would say that Brexit then reinforces so those identities, because it really in Northern Ireland brought up the issue of the border and where's the border going to be. It's currently in the Irish Sea, so unionists are contesting that, and it makes them feel threatened because their identity of being British is not necessarily... they feel like that threatens their British identity because they're sort of disconnected now from the rest of people in Britain.
And so then as a result, then do they, like... because their identity is threatened, does that create a more hostile environment then? Is that kind of what you're looking at? Or
yeah, absolutely. So that is one possible outcome. And although we haven't measured sort of attitudes directly, we know from other research that threat can definitely increase, negative attitudes towards the opposing group who they see as presenting a threat.
Yeah, but you're choosing not to look at the unionists, you're focusing on...
because I was interested in how Brexit is... So initially, nationalists, Republicans substantially voted against Brexit. The main political party, Sinn Féin, stood out and said, you know, Brexit, stood out against Brexit. But then after Brexit happened, so Brexit was a threat. This other opportunity sort of is going alongside it. So although they're very threatened, there's also this opportunity of maybe achieving their ultimate goal of reuniting Northern Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, because Brexit has sort of challenged sort of everything that's come was achieved in the agreement.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, let's use this now then to say, let's get what we've always wanted. It doesn't make sense for Northern Ireland to be part of the UK anymore. So let's achieve our goal.
And are you looking at, so obviously you're focusing on Republicans in the North, but are you also looking at Republicans in the Republic?
So in the third study, we're thinking of expanding it out to Republicans in the South as well, because obviously they're very much going to be involved if the United Ireland were to ever come a poll was to ever become an actual outcome, and people would need to get, you know, they'd need support from North and South, basically.
Yeah.
So we're thinking of opening it out. So in the first study, we only looked at nationalist Republicans in the North. Then in the second study, we looked at Sinn Féin leadership speeches. So although, and that's in Sinn Féin, the leadership speeches are, of course, speaking to people in the North and the South. So, yeah, we're sort of opening it out more.
Because, again, my opinion based on my experience of, like, having this conversation is that, as you mentioned, your identity is way stronger in the North, while, like, just out of interest, have you come across, is there, let's say, people who would identify as Republican but not strongly in the North? Because the idea definitely is, it's not like I would, like, my opinion, for example, would be I would like a Republic Ireland, but at the end of the day, like, I wouldn't die for it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, yeah, it's yeah. not like I prefer peace over, like, like, creating a hostile situation to make that change. Do you get me? So
absolutely,
do you come across that now in the North?
Yes. So one of the measures we use in our first study asks people, how much do you identify with this, identity? We specifically looked at people who called themselves Republic or Nationalist. And one of the measures actually said, not very strong, very strong. And we found differences within that group based on levels of identification. So the ones who were not very strong were less likely to sort of see a United Ireland as likely.
Yes.
But the more their identity strength increased, so very strong nationalists, Republicans, were more likely to say a United Ireland is likely. So in terms of levels of identification, that actually has, you know, differences within the group. It sort of informs their understanding of how they actually interpret the political world.
There's a term in clinical psychology, emotional reasoning. It's a negative automatic thought. The idea that basically when you want something to happen because you're emotionally invested, you think it's more likely to happen.
Yes, that's it. And that spills over into the political world, because it does it. You are so motivated to see your group in a positive light, and you want them to achieve these goals, that it actually, yeah, sort of informs your understanding of how.
And in that study, what other measures, or did you look at any other measures then?
Yep. So it was identity, how threatened people were by Brexit, and then how much they saw United Ireland as likely. And it was found that people with higher identification, so how much they saw themselves as Republicans or nationalists, they were more likely to see United Ireland as more likely, and they were also more likely to be threatened by Brexit. So these two things, if you were more threatened by Brexit, you were more likely to sort of see United Ireland as more likely, which is conflicting, because it's like, but it just shows that people can be both threatened and see opportunity at the same time, which I think is really interesting, because it's like, I'm threatened, so I want this outcome more.
Yeah.
And also how identity is really shaping people's views.
Okay.
There.
And do you think the government account for this in their policies in relation to, like, are they looking at it from social identity perspective or no?
I mean, if you look at leadership, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know, the political fallout from Brexit because of, say, the Unionist Party with the DUP, the largest Unionist Party in Northern Ireland, they haven't sat in government for, I think it's since early this year, because they refused to accept the Northern Ireland Protocol, which puts a border in the Irish Sea. So, no, they're not. They're just... it's not been considered.
But surely, again, I know this is not your research exactly, but surely because of that, then Northern Irish identity is moving away from British identity. Do you know, if surely they feel less part, even though they want it, they feel less part of Britain.
Yes. So
in the last few months anyway.
Pulling it back there. So the Northern Irish identity would be a completely different identity to a British identity as well.
Okay.
So there's three. So a Northern Irish identity. So you've got Irish and British, which would probably be the sort of ones that would butt heads more, because one wants to be part of Ireland and or one sees themselves as Irish and more connected to people in the Republic, whereas people who call themselves British, you know, probably would prefer Northern Ireland to stay as part of the UK.
Mm.
But then the Northern Irish identity is seen as a more progressive identity and like coming away from those two potentially like divisive identities. Northern Irish identity is seen as more way to separate yourself from those divided identities and just claim, I'm Northern Irish, I don't identify with any particular ideology, etc.
Yeah.
So coming back to your question, the British identity, that's what we sort of talk about. So we did an article for The Psychologist magazine, and in that we sort of spoke about how, because of the protocol, people in Northern Ireland who think themselves as British and see themselves as British might be threatened by the idea of a border in the sea, because it makes them less feel like they can call themselves British than people who might also be Welsh and British or Scottish and British.
Yeah.
So yeah, it definitely has a potential to challenge their sense of identity.
And has anybody looked at research in Scotland or Wales in relation to, is there any overlap between what you're looking at and...
They're probably... I'm not sure, to be honest. I think, though, it's interesting if there is overlap, but they don't have that backdrop of conflict over identity that Northern Ireland has.
Yeah.
Which is what makes it
makes a
whole different beast.
And then, from a social psychology perspective, are there any other, like, psychological processes then that you've kind of noticed in your findings, or more so, like, just in general that helps you understand what's happening? Because...
Good question. I don't know. Let me think.
You can say you don't know if you want. That's fine.
I think it's such a social, it's sort of social and political topic. And you're looking at stuff at the group level, it's kind of hard to deviate away from that in terms of like individual psychology.
Because I think like in general for individual to individual, that's the problem. They see it as very black and white. Mm. It's just like my view on it should be that the way it is. But they don't realise that their individual perspective and their group perspective are two different things.
Mm.
So it's a complicated... thing to conceptualize, I suppose, but I was just wondering, like, was there anything else? Mm. And then, like, I'm going to be selfish here.
Yes.
So we're moving into we're starting to do workshops now in Northern Ireland for the first time, and one thing that really fascinates me, I know this isn't completely your area, mm-hmm. but one thing that really fascinates me in Northern Ireland is still the divide in schools between Protestant schools and Catholic mm-hmm. schools. So first question I'm going to ask is, you're focusing on Republican, are you still looking at religion or as an identity, like, or?
So we have measured it, but we don't use it as such as a marker, but there's such overlapping identities there. Your religious background is, so some people, it's interesting, will say, I'm Catholic, but I'm also an atheist, because religious identity, Catholic or Protestant, is more a marker of your community. It's
yes.
not whether or not you practice. It's like, well, basically I grew up with these set of beliefs and this community.
And I think Ireland's funny, like the island of Ireland, because like religion is a stronger identity marker compared to other countries. So
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Another reason why they might. But yeah, then going back to just in relation to education, like in relation to like the applications of your research,
mm-hmm.
like, so do you think it's a good idea if, like, do you think it would help Northern Ireland if group identities were simplified or broken down or minimized?
I mean, it's hard. I don't want to like just oversimplify anything, but I think the younger generation, maybe more keen to move away from those labels and say like the take up of that Northern Irish identity, as I said, which makes you more, it basically doesn't give people an idea about which side of the divide you sit on, Irish or British. Northern Irish is more of a neutral in some ways. Identity and is associated with more positive, like pro-social attitudes about other communities, British, Irish, da da da. So, in terms of moving away from or oversimplifying identities, I think maybe the people are just, there is research that shows people are moving away from the unionist and nationalist labels,
okay,
and are increasingly identifying as neither. I'm neither, because I just don't want to put themselves into one pocket. So,
but that, yeah, that's surely a positive.
Yeah.
But yeah, you see, that's the point I'm making, that I find it strange in that basically I feel like before Brexit, definitely it was going that way, but then government policies weren't acting in accordance to the way it was going. Like I still find it it's such a simple thing to do to would be to mix the schools, not have Catholic and Protestant schools, just have schools.
I know. No mix, and it starts at the very top if you think about it, because even in the government, it has to be one from the so there has to be a first minister and a deputy first minister. And one has to be from the unionist community and one has to be from a nationalist community.
Yeah.
So it's always along those two lines. Mm. So if it's starting there, it's going to, of course, filter down into the level of people going to school.
And so I'm assuming what happened overall in relation to trends is basically the, on an identity basis, like groups were identifying less over time after the Good Friday Agreement, but now because of Brexit, it's gone back up. Is that?
I think it's fair to say maybe identities won. I mean, Northern Ireland's not necessarily they've taken a back seat, but stuff was probably going along more harmoniously, apart from maybe a few things along the way. Of course, there's been like hiccups along the way since the Good Friday Agreement too. But yeah, Brexit sort of put a spanner in the works, and so that research that I was saying there about people identifying as neither, so I'm neither unionist, I'm neither nationalist, I identify as just neither of those. Research has shown, so there's a sociologist in Queens, Katie Hayward, she shows that after a period after Brexit, the uptake of people calling themselves very strong nationalist increased because people have reverted back to those ideological positions of what I want and what we want from this situation.
But do you think it's like is it plateauing now or is it staying increased? Because I suppose, like, from, I don't know, is this me looking at the glass half full, but like you could look at Brexit as maybe like a test to showing the improvement. Do you get me? Like, it was expected that it would go up, but the hope is that, like, I don't know, like social identities would kind of plateau then over time.
I think it really matters about the context. So any sort of change in the context could send it completely up in the air again.
Yeah.
So if something were to happen which angered, say, the unionists, for example, that might increase people's anger and want them to, I think the context will matter how much identities are informing things.
Okay, and so your first study, so you were mentioned you were looking at the relationship between threat, identity, and how much people thought was likely United Ireland.
Yeah.
So your second study then?
Second study was a qualitative. So we looked at leadership speeches from Sinn Féin following the Brexit referendum. So we wanted to see, after this momentous political change, how have Sinn Féin, who really opposed Brexit, shifted the narrative towards let's use it as an opportunity for a united Ireland?
Yeah.
So we sort of put together speeches from 2016 to 2022, and we took Mary Lou MacDonald, who's the president, and Michelle O'Neill, who is vice president and leader in Northern Ireland, and looked at how they're sort of articulating their political agenda and vision for United Ireland to followers. And that was really interesting because, of course, they need support from unionists. They need the buy-in from unionists as well in order to achieve this. It won't be just, a Republican vote. They need majority support. So it's interesting to see how they use, how they sort of articulate their vision by trying to promote unity between these divided groups. And so that's been really interesting to do, actually.
Okay, have you finished it or?
We've done the analysis and we're finalising the manuscript now.
Are you able to talk about results or in?
I don't know. I think so. I think so.
Yeah. So like just general findings, like.
General findings were that. So what they do is they use. They first present Britain as a problem for Ireland and sort of use this historical narrative of Britain's always been a problem.
Yeah.
For Ireland. Brexit is just the latest example of them trying to divide us and break up our people. And they draw on like the conflict and stuff to say, you know, how they behave then is sort of how they're behaving now. Disregard for Ireland. Can't let that continue. Which might potentially ruffle the feathers of unionists or whatever, so it's not really speaking to everyone there. But then when they present their vision for their solution for a united Ireland, so let's do a united Ireland without Britain, they try to appeal to all everyone in Ireland, and they make this united Ireland a really inclusive place where divisions of the past between unionists and Republicans is of the past. And they talk about, you know, in this new Ireland we must learn to find ways to forgive each other and reconcile for the past.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're doing this narrative of reconciliation, moving on from the past. They're very clever because they're just, you know, that's just a position that they offer. They don't actually, it's quite strategic. They don't actually talk about who needs to say sorry, because that would probably mean they'd have to implicate themselves a little bit and some of their supporters and the role that they had in the conflict. So it's very much strategic what they're doing, but what we do is we look at how they offer this vision and how they talk about identities in order to offer this political vision.
Okay.
So that's been,
And then I'm assuming, like, again, I know this is not what you're specifically looking at, but I'm guessing from the the unionist parties, then they're just doing the complete opposite, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
But you see, I find that funny then, because like I think there is blatant evidence at the moment, you know, like on your defence you were saying that like Britain doesn't care about Northern Ireland, but and then I suppose the defence to that would be, oh no, they do, but there is kind of evidence out there now that they don't.
Yeah.
They don't care about Northern Ireland. So
we didn't know whether to look at Sinn Féin and DUP. So I have looked a bit at DUP's speeches, but very like surface level analysis. And they have to sort of tread carefully that line between, because Britain did sort of betray them. You know, Boris Johnson said there will never be a border in the Irish Sea, and he was sort of got their backing on that. And then what did he do? He did that. So they have to tread carefully between, we don't want to leave Britain. Britain's our home, you know, sovereignty. And also, also they've treated us like rubbish. But they also make light of that. Like there's actually a quote where Arlene Foster's like, on Boris, we need to put Boris on the naughty step. And it's like, I think it's a bit bigger than that, what's happened. It's interesting to see how they navigate those sort of, they navigate things in order to just keep their political agenda going.
And then, I know you mentioned already, so like future research then, like third study, finishing your PhD, possibly postdoc, what are you thinking or what would you be interested in researching?
So we're thinking about doing some maybe experimental work, and so we've talked about threat and opportunity, trying to induce that threat and opportunity, and we have equipment in terms of, what does that equipment called? it measures your heart rate your blood pressure. So it would be like a sort of an objective measure, and we would try and induce threat and challenge, as it's called in the literature, rather than opportunity, and see whether we can actually, maybe from leadership speeches, induce threat and opportunity in a Republican nationalist sample.
So is what you want to do is you want to remove the threat? Is that the idea of...
No, we want to see if... we want to see... I mean, this is so early days.
That's fine.
My aims and background are not up to measure. But we want to sort of induce that threat and see whether like leadership or people talking about Brexit or United Ireland can actually make people feel threatened or make them see it as a challenge and a potential opportunity.
Okay.
And sort of measure that, because people might not self-report threat or self-report that they see an opportunity, but their body physiological reactions will tell us.
And I would guess you would expect that.
Yeah, that's what we want to see. So we want to see when they're talking about, I don't know, Brexit, is that going to make them feel threatened? But when they talk about United Ireland, are they going to feel challenge or opportunity?
Mm. Yeah.
But this is very early days, Christian.
Yeah. And then down the line, like just in relation, like if I told you I can give you funding now to research
anything
you want.
Wow.
Or maybe you don't want to. I don't know.
I really like what I'm looking at now. Maybe coming away from Brexit a bit and just sticking with the topic of Northern Ireland.
Okay.
I really enjoy that work.
I find Northern Ireland so interesting because, you know, like they're such, like I feel they're so disadvantaged, but this is again from my perspective being in the Republic. Like my, again, very uneducated understanding of it is that it would help the Northern Irish economy too if there was a Republic in Ireland, but because they're such strong social identities with unionism, they would prefer a struggle, like not prosper economically.
Mm-hmm.
Because they care so much about their identity. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I just think that's such a unique situation.
Isn't it?
Like it obviously was beneficial to be part of the United Kingdom, mm-hmm. I think, like a few decades ago. But now I don't see the benefit. But
I know that's why it is, as you say, so interesting, because identity is just at the forefront of everything. And
yes.
That's so hard to...
break down. Yeah.
And
but you do think it's better. You do think if we could break it down, that would improve the situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's butting heads constantly.
And then the most difficult question, last question I have about your research in general, Katrina, from your educated opinion, do you think we will see possibly United Ireland down the line?
I think so.
Okay.
Not necessarily a United Ireland. I think there'll be a poll, like a border poll, which will be, I mean, they don't even know what that would look like, but basically in the Good Friday Agreement, there's the stipulation that if a majority in Northern Ireland want a border poll, then the like Secretary of State or someone has to initiate that border poll. So I think if you look at like demographics, in the north, there is, I think for the first time ever, the census revealed that there were more from the Catholic background than a Protestant background, which is actually quite a big deal, because for a long time, Catholics were the minority and Protestants were the majority.
It's the first time that's flipped, isn't it?
And it's the first time. So Sinn Féin, the largest nationalist party, they got the first minister seat. So they have like the most. So they have the most amount of seats, maybe in
yeah.
So for the first time, they were the largest party in Northern Ireland, taking over a unionist party. So stuff like that just makes sure. And then Sinn Féin in the south are really gaining popularity
and
as
it'll
well.
Be interesting now in the next year or two.
So, you know, if their main goal is for a United Ireland, then you just, these sort of wheels are in motion. There could be a border poll, a referendum on it, potentially. But that would need a majority vote. So whether that is going
to
happen.
You must have to track the news all of the time, do you? To keep up to date. It must be exhausting. Last question then, moving away from your project specifically, Katrina, then we have quite a lot of listeners. They might be going into PhDs or they might be thinking about starting them. So, or current PhD students, do you have any advice or recommendations, like looking back, if you were a first year PhD student now, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, Yes. I could probably write like 100 like self-help books on PhD life, but I think the one that would stick out for me is like the most one that sort of changed the game for me was building a support network of other PhD students. Like yourself, we started during COVID, so I'd also really just
difficult.
Yes, I'd also just moved from England here, so literally had no friends as such and had no one else I knew doing a PhD, and we had like online coffees and stuff but not very often. But getting in touch with other PhD students, like just through connections and who were doing similar projects in terms of social psychology, and we had the same supervisor, we were able to share experiences that made me realise, oh, okay, everyone else has felt like this before. Everyone else has encountered this problem. Yeah. Whereas before, I was like, whoa. Like, there were times where you just think, oh, God, I don't know if I can actually see this through. But sharing those experiences and having other people, like, say, oh, no, I've done that. I felt like dropping out and da-da-da.
Yeah.
They've said that to me, you know, da-da-da, all good. That was just... made me stay in the game for sure.
Like a real life comparison is always better than one that you make up in your head, I think. That's the big thing, because when you're alone, you'll start thinking like, oh, everybody knows what they're doing.
Yes. Yeah, you just catastrophize everything.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. And then last thing, firstly, anything else you want to mention about your research, or have we covered it?
I don't think so.
Okay, perfect. Last question. Where can people find you, Katrina? You and your research?
Like on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah, I'm just on Twitter with my name, Katrina Shelley. And I think on there it has like the article. So we did an article for the Psychologist magazine, which really breaks down this research and provides an overview of why Brexit is a problem in Northern Ireland. So that's like a nice, easy to digest article if people are interested.
Perfect. I will include it in the show notes. We'll leave it there. Katrina, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much again for coming on. I suppose I also like to mention, because I know most people here are more interested in the child and clinical psychology perspective, but the social processes, the macro system, they probably have the greatest impact on our mental health. We just don't, we're not always aware of it. So I think, it's important to discuss these things too. So thank you again for coming on.
Thanks, and Christy,
I
hope you enjoyed. That was fun.